Hello, everyone. Welcome to another edition of Meet the Candidates. I'm your host, Jonathan Grabowski. We're talking the 4th Plymouth District today, and joining me on the show is the independent candidate for the seat, Nathaniel Powell. Nathaniel, thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
All right, so we're going to get into a whole bunch of topics, issues, you know, various things, but I want to start off with, who is Nathaniel Powell?
I'm a third-generation Marshfield resident, grew up in the town, went to Marshfield High School, graduated from UMass Amherst with honors from the Eisenberg School of Management. I'm a firefighter in town. I also own a small landscape excavation company. It's basically family run. And I'm married. My wife's Jennifer. Mm-hmm. She's a nurse. And we have 5 kids together, all in the Marshfield school system. And they're great. They're great kids.
Excellent. So why are you running? Why this seat?
Well, you know, I've always had an interest in politics. You know, I am on the executive board for my local fire department, for the union local 2568. We've negotiated many contracts. I'm on the insurance advisory committee. And I've always had an interest. It kind of doesn't help if I run as a selectman because I have to withstand from quite a few votes, mm-hmm. probably. And with only there being 3 selectmen, now you take out one vote on a lot of issues. Yeah, there's only two voters on many issues, and, mm-hmm. and that's not fair to the town either. So this opportunity popped up, and I don't think anyone expected Jim Cantwell to go work for Markey's office. Right. So I jumped at it.
Okay. I want to do a little civics 101 here. What is the role of a state representative?
That's a great question. I believe as a state representative, you are representing your district, your community. Mm-hmm. You have to have a pulse on what's going on in the community. You're not only trying to push through your legislation on Beacon Hill, but what I think is more important is you're trying to vote against legislation that would adversely affect us. And I think that's even more important than trying to push through your own legislation.
So you're running as an independent. Why run independent?
Well, to go back to voting against legislation that adversely affects you, I feel you can make a more issues-based decision, an independent decision, not being pulled by either party. And I think that's what this community needs. They need someone that works in this community, that has a pulse on what's going on, and can make that independent decision.
What do you think is the benefit of running as an independent? You think just, you know, not being pulled in that one direction?
That's a huge benefit, but running the campaign, that I don't think there's many benefits. We were just talking about this off the air. It's very difficult. You know, I don't have that big voter pool of information that mm-hmm. the Democrats and the Republicans have behind them, but it's also refreshing. You know, I think there is a lot of people out there that want some change, that want that independent voice, mm-hmm. That are kind of sick of the current state of the mm-hmm. Republicans and Democrats going on. I mean, look at what's going on today with the Kavanaugh hearings. Yeah. You know, take it for what you will, mm-hmm. but, you know, it's kind of a big battle between the Republicans and the Democrats right now. Mm-hmm.
Where do you sit on the political spectrum? You know, we're in this society of people, you know, if people are identifying as, you know, being far on the left, far on the right, rhinos. Where do you sit on that spectrum of?
So I would like to think that I am always going to be an issues-based candidate.
Okay.
And that's what I really want to push. But if you were really going to push me and put me on that spectrum, I would probably say I'm more of a moderate conservative.
Okay, great. The question we've been asking all the candidates this season is, it's a fill-in-the-blank question. So if you can fill in the blank with a current political figure or a recent political figure, that'd be great. If you like blank, you'll like Nathaniel Powell.
How about, can I go way back a little
yeah,
bit?
Yeah, sure.
How about Dwight D. Eisenhower?
I'll take it. That's fine. That's perfectly fine.
If we could go even, how about the first time Scott Brown ran.
Okay, even better.
Not the second time.
All right. Yeah. In your eyes, what's the number one issue you think facing the district?
So I think right now we have three or four major issues, and I think they're all intertwined.
Okay.
And I think they're all pressing issues. You know, I think our coastal infrastructure, mm-hmm. I think the opioids mm-hmm. epidemic, and I also think, and what ties into that is like your mental health and your health care.
Okay. Well, we're actually going to get into those in a little bit. But first, question one. You mentioned in the intro that your wife is a nurse.
She is.
Where are you for or against question one? Do you have a position?
I am for question one. Right. I'm a yes on question one.
All right. And recently we've seen these ballot initiatives come up a lot more. We've seen it with sick time, marijuana. Do you think ballot initiatives are a good way to make or change laws?
No, but I do think they're a last-ditch effort by a lot of these political parties, or mm-hmm. in this case, with the nurses union. Mm-hmm. I know the nurses, especially Mass Nurse Association, they've tried to negotiate with the hospitals, they've tried to negotiate, and they've been denied.
Okay.
And this is kind of their last-ditch effort to kind of push this question through in their patient limits. I mean, they're taking a big risk, because if it doesn't go through, I mean, I don't think they can put through legislation like this again.
Okay. One of the issues that you talked about is mental health. And I know on your website mm-hmm. you've talked about the problems happen when people don't take their medication, whether it's
Correct.
They refuse to or they can't afford it. How do you work to solve that?
Well, I think, let rewind a little bit.
Sure.
I think even when I was a kid and I'm not saying this in a bad way or anything, but there were mental health facilities.
Right.
And I think we realized as a society it was cheaper, it was easier, and these mentally ill people could be functioning people in society if they were on these medications. Mm-hmm. Problem comes when either they can't afford their medications, they don't take their medications for whatever reason, and maybe they even start self-medicating at that point, which leads down the road of maybe to even the opioid mm-hmm. epidemic. My feeling is, there's plenty of facility room, whether it's Taunton, whether just in this area, whether it's Taunton or it's Bridgewater State, mm-hmm. They just need the funding. And there's plenty of, they have the facilities, they're already in place, they just need the funding. And I think that's your next step.
Okay. Jump into school safety. What are some possible solutions to protecting our children in that learning environment?
Well, I think dealing with your mental health in a different aspect, that ties into school safety. If you want to strictly talk about school safety in the building, I would love to see, I know Chief Tavares, mm-hmm. Chief Stewart and Situate, mm-hmm. they do a great job, you know, running their school safety drills and their active shooter drills and everything. I would love to see all doors in all school buildings, classroom doors open inward, because it's a lot easier to put a doorstop in them and keep them shut.
Right.
So that's one thing, and it's terrible that these kids have to grow up in a society like this and worry about something like this, but it is a fact of our society today, and we have to prepare for it.
You have five children, right?
I do.
Are they all in the school district? Or?
They are. So I have two in the high school, I have two in elementary school, and my youngest is in preschool right now.
Right. So let's talk a little about education.
Yep.
Do you think the state does enough to support local schools?
The state aid is there. Would you always like to see more? Yes. Would you like to see Chapter 70 reworked a little bit? Mm-hmm. I mean, I would, because I think some communities don't get their fair share. I think I would like to see, without getting into too much detail, I mean, you have your what they call the foundation budget for every student, mm-hmm. and it's different for every town,
right.
You know. And I see the value in that. But where I would like to see is maybe like a percentage based where your local aid is maybe a percentage base for every student. And so now you're requiring these communities to put in their own money and fund their own education.
One of the topics always comes up with schools is testing. In your opinion, do we test enough, not enough, too much?
I mean, this is another touchy subject.
Yeah, it is.
So my fear is, and after talking to a lot of teachers, you know, that especially with MCAS, I feel like we're getting away from teaching our students. We are teaching to the test. And I don't think that's the right approach to teaching. You know, I think we should be teaching these children so they understand the concepts and not just so they can pass a test. And I would much rather prefer that.
Okay. Then there's higher ed. How do we make sure that higher ed in the state is affordable?
I'm so glad you brought this up. So down in Florida, the state lottery pays for any graduating senior with a 3.0 grade point average or higher to go to state school. They pay the tuition. I went to the state lottery here. I said, is that possible? Is there any way we could do something like that? And I talked to the CEO at the state lottery. He's like, probably not, because a lot of our state lottery money goes to local aid, and right, they're not going to give that up. I said, fair enough. But I said, so I took it a step farther. I said, well, what about sports gambling? It just got legalized. Mm-hmm. What if you guys took that over? You already have the infrastructure in place. You took it over, and could we just take that money from sports gambling and put that towards education? And he thought about it for a second, and he's like, I don't see why not. It wouldn't cost us, the state, any more money, because like I said, the infrastructure's already in place. You know, it'd be like running Keno at a bar almost.
Right,
you know?
Yeah, exactly.
And everybody plays Keno.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. One of the things that's come up in talking to businesses and schools and all that is the trades. Do we need to push that trade route more?
Absolutely. Right now, the average age of a plumber is like 60 years old. That's not sustainable.
No.
And you're always going to need a plumber, and that's just one example.
Mm-hmm.
What I would love to see is whether you start pushing more vocational schools, maybe take some of these kids that, even if they want to go to college, introduce them to mm-hmm. some of the trades. So if they go to college and college doesn't work out for them, they have a trade to fall back on. They have a career to fall back on that they can provide for their families with. It's not a bad thing to work with your hands.
You talked about the opioid epidemic earlier, and something that comes up literally, I feel like, almost every time we're doing the show, if it's mm-hmm. a selectman, a DA, a state rep, a state senator.
Mm-hmm.
You're a first responder, so you've seen this firsthand. What's your perspective on it?
My perspective is being in it from pretty much ground zero. I'm waist deep in it now.
Yeah.
I think it's a multi-dimensional, multi-layered problem, and there's no one simple solution to it right now. I think one of the simplest things that we can do right now, if I did get in as your next state rep, is to push through what they call Section 35. It's a very simple piece of legislation. It would take nothing to put it through. And what it does is, if you have a loved one that your fear will harm themselves, basically overdose,
okay,
what you can do is, right now you can file for Section 35 with a judge, but right now you can only do it Monday through judge's hours, which is Monday through Friday, just say 9 to 5.
Mm-hmm.
And what that does is get this particular patient in, gets them evaluated, and gets them into a facility to hopefully get on the road to recovery. But right now, like I said, you can only do it Monday through Friday, right, 9 to 5, and a good majority of overdoses, do happen at night or on the weekends. And now these families are forced to almost babysit, these patients, all weekend long,
yeah,
and hope and pray that nothing bad happens. There's no reason why that shouldn't be a 24-hour, 7-day a week piece of legislation that can go through.
Interesting. One of the issues that faces this district is coastal issues.
Yes.
How do we work to preserve the coastline?
Another great question. So my belief from the very beginning of my campaign has been that we have to rebuild these seawalls.
Okay.
But not only that, we can't deny the fact that the ocean's rising, mm-hmm. and now we have to protect these seawalls. And I think one of the best ways, or right now, there's been really big studies and really positive studies down mm-hmm. south, particularly South Carolina, for what these wave attenuating devices, yeah. or WADs. And what they do is they break down the kinetic energy of the waves. So by the time it gets to the seawall, it's a very minimal impact. But what they're also proven down south is that they're replenishing some of the beaches down there. And the best part about that is, particularly South Carolina, they're moving them farther out in the ocean because they've replenished the beach so much. And I mean, around here, we could all use a little, some sandy beaches rather Absolutely. Than all the stone.
Right.
So
that's interesting. Another part of that is the fishing industry. This, I think it's the third largest fishing port in the state or so region?
Green Harbor is consistently the third or fourth okay. top producing commercial harbor in all of Massachusetts. And right now, particularly the lobster industry, I know they're very highly regulated. And around here, I know in Marshfield particular, they're shut down for 3 months. Yeah. And this year in particular, they were shut down for an extra 2 weeks because of the right whales. So what they're fearing right now is the entanglements with the fishing gear and everything. And I understand the regulations. Mm-hmm. See, I'm going to definitely play in the middle here.
Okay.
I understand the regulations, yeah. but I also understand the fishermen's point of view. And when the fishermen are willing to work with the national fisheries, and now they're not willing to work with the fishermen, that's a problem. We have to get them together. We have to get them working together. Okay. I know a lot of the fishermen have come out with new knots. They're almost like a Chinese finger knot.
Okay.
So if a whale ever did get entangled, the line would break away. And the best part, too, if they've really done their homework and they've spread them out. So now they have 40-foot lengths, which is just about the size of a mature male right whale. So hopefully, if he ever did get entangled, it would break away. But they're spread so far apart, the chances of them getting entangled are very minimal. I'm only asking for them to come out and at least work with these fishermen and maybe go out with them and work together so they can do their job and we can protect the right whales.
So you see your role as a state representative to almost be the middleman getting everyone to the
exactly.
table in that situation.
Absolutely.
Okay, great. Economic development's something that gets talked about all the time, no matter what district you're in. How would your election help small business or the district's business climate?
Another big proponent I've been for is getting rid of bill bundling.
Talk about that.
I know, speaking from a personal standpoint, back, I think, 2009, 2010, with the automatic fuel tax got implemented. And I know that crushed us. I mean, at the time, the housing market had bottomed out. A lot of us were struggling, and then we get hit with this the automatic fuel tax. I mean, we were paying almost $4 a gallon for diesel. Mm-hmm. It was insane. But the part that irritated me about it is that it was bundled in this big bill, and mm-hmm. all these legislators were like, well, we didn't know anything about it, but you voted yes on it. And I think it's just, you're not doing your constituents justice when you're not looking at every individual bill mm-hmm. and breaking it down. When you bundle them all together, someone's going to get screwed in there, and that's not fair.
Mm-hmm. What's an opportunity to help the district become economically stronger? Any potential opportunities you see out there?
Well, I know in Marshfield in particular, I know the Chamber of Commerce is a big proponent of building up the center of town.
Yeah, walkability.
Yeah.
Webster walkability.
I personally, I'm not against it, but I think we have a better opportunity down like Brant Rock, the Esplanade area, and I think that's it's more inviting. You can do it in a more characteristic way that is Marshfield. I'm not saying we put up a big hotel or anything like that, but make it quaint, make it very, very inviting and just invite people there.
Right.
As far as economic Scituate, I mean, before you do anything in Scituate right now, they got to clean up that water system.
Right.
I would highly, highly discourage any kind of building over there until you figure out that water system.
Right. I agree. One of the things that South Shore Chamber of Commerce several years ago did a 2030 study, mm-hmm. and out of it came the issue we're facing the South Shore is that it's an aging population. We need to, attract younger people and attract more business. And I would just want to know, do you agree with that theory? And how do we work to attract younger people and more business to the area?
Well, I think this kind of plays into the issue that we have on hand coming up, particularly in Marshfield again, and I hate just singling out Marshfield.
Well, we are Marshfield, right?
But we have the override coming up, mm-hmm. Or a potential override coming up. And I think talking to a lot of senior citizens, they're very concerned about it because they're on fixed budgets and they feel almost like they could be being pushed out of the town for that reason. And I also feel a lot of younger people feel like they can't afford to live here. Mm-hmm. So I think whatever we do for an economic stimulus, it's got to be fiscally responsible. Mm-hmm. So we're not pricing out everybody, so they can't move here.
Right. If you're elected, give me one thing that you are really going to focus on.
Well, with everything being so intertwined, I really do think my wheelhouse is healthcare and the mental health and the opioid epidemics.
Awesome. I know you've been on the campaign trail. I know you've been everywhere, knocking on doors. What's one thing you've been hearing from voters, going through that?
The best thing I've heard is that they love when you come and knock at their door. They love that I'm an independent, mm-hmm. that, and I really do. I go to listen to them. Right. Now I do get doors slammed in my face, an independent, you have no chance, I'm purely Democrat, you get the whole spectrum,
right.
But for the most part, a lot of people do like the fact that I'm an independent.
Has there been any memorable interactions or someone you met that really kind of stuck with you?
Excuse me. I don't know how to word it, but it was a unique incident. I'm talking to this one lady and we're hitting it off. I feel like I've got her vote, what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
She loves everything I'm saying. And then out of the blue, she's like, I love everything you're saying. I love everything you stand for, but I got to ask you one question. I said, sure, what's that? And just out of the blue, she's like, Black Lives. I said, what about Black Lives?
Yeah.
She's like, well, do they matter? I said, yeah, all lives matter.
Interesting.
But it was just we had such a great back and forth, and it was just such an awkward question.
Yeah.
It just stuck out in my mind. That's
it's
all.
Different. So we always go through a lot of, hard-hitting topics on this show. And so we always try to end it on a lighter, fun note. So we always try to end with some fun questions. But first off, if someone wants to find out more about you, where can they go?
My website is electnathanielpowell.org. My Facebook page is Nathaniel Powell for State Rep. And my cell phone is 339-793-0086. You can call me anytime.
That's brave putting your phone number out there. But what's something interesting about you that people may not know?
When I graduated, I got an award for never missing a day of school.
Really?
Kindergarten through 12th grade. So some people know about it, some people don't believe me, but it really did happen.
Excellent. If we were to steal your iPod, iPhone, whatever you used to play music on, what would we find on it?
You'd definitely find Neil Young, probably some Pearl Jam. Okay. If depending on my mood, you might find some Dave Matthews, some Guster in there. But that's typically what you find.
Clearly, you grew up in the 90s. And then, last but certainly not least, why are you the best candidate for this position?
I'm the best candidate because I've walked in a lot of these people's shoes. I have a family. I realize that it's no longer a middle class, it's a working class. These families are struggling now. They live in paycheck to paycheck. There's no more slush fund for these people. I am paying the flood insurance. I am paying the property tax. I am working every day. I am one of them, and I want to listen to them, and I want to bring their voice up to Beacon Hill.
Well, I want to wish you the best of luck on the campaign trail, and thank you for joining us today.
Thank you very much for having me.
Absolutely. And that's all the time we have for Meet the Candidates. Until next time, make it a great day.